What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it is a beautiful Tuesday in the neighborhood. Got mandatory OTAs going on. Guys getting back to practice. Another day closer to my three-day weekend coming up.
There it is.
So, man, I am doing great.
Heck yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And yeah, pretty good day today, Tuesday. It's nothing too like crazy out of the ordinary, so to speak. Other than, like you said, we got going at the mandatory mini camp, which is today and tomorrow. I always found it like super interesting that mandatory mini camp that everybody freaks out about whether somebody's there or not ends up being just like it's just 2 days, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I really don't know exactly, other than just physically, you know, from a coaching standpoint, physically putting your hand, like eyes on the guys, you know, before they break for, you know, summer vacation or whatnot. It's like, I'm not sure how much you're going to accomplish in 2 days. You know, maybe it's a deal where, hey, they're just trying to see, you know, how much retention that they have, or I don't know.
Probably some of that, and then also like things to leave them on a certain note, like, hey, just remember this stuff, or, you know, make sure you're going over this part, because when we come back, we're going to really dig deep into this. Right. Yeah, there's all kinds of potential reasons why, and it probably varies from team to team.
Yeah, so I guess without much further ado, we'll just continue to get into it. Yeah. 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 Now, before we get too much into it, Flavius Hobbs was nice enough to drop this comment before the show even got started, and I felt like, you know what, I wanted to read it. It was a nice comment, so he says, always a pleasure to hear your thoughts on the team. I think your coaching experience has provided you with more wisdom in your commentary. Also, thank you for your professionalism. That is something that me and Jonathan try to strive for is, you know, professionalism in, like, no, we're not professionals, obviously. Like, I have a 9-to-5. John has a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
You know, they're, you know, like, there's a good chance that I'm all over, you know, Atlanta and the surrounding area on a daily basis. So, I mean, you could easily run into me anywhere. So, but that doesn't mean that when we come on live and we hit, you know, go, that there's a certain standard that we want to try to hold to. And, you know, I appreciate it when people like see that standard and recognize it, because that tells me that it's coming through, you know?
Yeah.
And like when we go to, like, Mercedes-Benz for a practice or a game, or we're up at Flowery Branch for training camp or whatever, we want y'all to feel like y'all can come up and talk to us, because at the end of the day, like I said, we're fans like y'all. We ain't getting paid to do this. Nope. Not in any way that makes it meaningful. I might get enough to buy me a shirt.
Yep.
Or a hat.
That's about it. That's how I got my hoodie. That's how I got I think it's pretty much it. It's like the hoodie. And that's been it. I hope maybe it'll get us to a game or two this year.
Yeah, we'll
see how that goes.
Right. I mean, the channel is partially responsible for all these daggum hats behind me. So, much to my wife's chagrin. No, actually, she encourages me probably more than she should. anyway, Chris says, what's going on, Falcon fans? What's going on, Chris?
What's going on, Chris?
How's the weather out there in Oregon? I'm always curious how the other side of the country is doing. John Higgins says, hey, P4P, what's happening, guys? What's going on, John?
How's it going, John?
Man, we just here about to chop it up about these Falcons. Before we get to the true dead season, this will be like the last live information that we have gotten. And sounds like, as far as minicamp goes, the only folks that weren't there, outside of Avery Williams, obviously, because he tore his ACL, was Kyle Pitts, Eddie Goldman, and Caleb Huntley. And all those guys are reasonable for them not being there. You know, with Pitts coming
back. Two guys coming back from injury, Pitts and Huntley. And then Goldman, he's doing his own thing. He's like on a different track, trying to get back into football shape from retirement.
Right.
So I expect him probably to like actually start being with the team when they come back from the break, would be my guess. So.
My real one, I wonder is like a guy like Eddie Goldman, who's been on a, hiatus for a while. I wonder, like, during this break, like, is he, instead of like maybe Cancuning it up one last time before this, training camp, is he like really pushing it, trying to get back into football shape or what have you?
Right. That would be my guess. Is he's maybe not keeping up with the routines, the daily routines of trying to get back into football shape.
Right. Chris says he's been trying to get back into
Right.
football shape for 20 years. I am in the shape of a football.
I mean,
round
is
and
that
oval.
counts, right?
Hey, look, anytime anybody always brings it up talking about getting into shape, I am a shape. It just happens to be round, So it's
Exactly.
still a shape though, right? MJ, we appreciate y'all like showing up, 'cause
Yeah.
honestly, if you didn't, I just called Jonathan on the phone and we were
Yeah,
just playing.
we just call and rant and rave about the Falcons to each other.
That's right. That's right. But because y'all do show up week in and week out, we rant and rave to y'all. But back to mini camp. There was one of the interesting things, like from Tori's notes, because obviously we're not getting a lot of like videos out of this, out of the mini camp, at least not yet. The practice was this afternoon. The one thing that I found interesting, and I see you correct me if I'm wrong, same thing with y'all in chat. They did today's practice down at the bins, and I hadn't known them do any OTAs down at the bins before. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit, because Michael Rosenthal had like a little sound bite from Desmond Ridder asking him, had he thrown with Kyle Pitts or what have you, or like was he trying to get scheduled to have like a throwing session before training camp? And I was like, was that from was that from the other Friday? Because they were in
Yeah.
the bins. And then Torrey McElhinney like said, like the Falcons began mandatory mini camp on Tuesday afternoon at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They'll practice again Wednesday in Flowery Branch. So I just found that interesting that they had, done an OTA on at the bins. I don't
I
know. Do
wonder
you
it.
know that?
Well, so there's some guys like Cordarrelle Patterson. This is so he was there, and this is the first time that he's worked out with the 2023 version of the
Right.
Falcons. So I wonder if this is for guys to, and specifically being at the bins, maybe it's a situation where it's like, okay, we're gonna come in, everybody needs, because potentially they have different lockers like in different positions. So like, hey, let's make sure everybody knows their way around, where their locker's at, get their, if there's any stuff they want to put in their locker, like this is time to kind of get that stuff set up. Meet and greet with some people who haven't had a chance to meet and greet yet, like face to
Right.
face potentially. Just kind of bringing everybody together that can be here. Just putting names to faces and all that jazz, just getting everybody, together, could be a good reason why, it happens at the bins.
Right. So like we're saying before, we like there's not much like analysis we can give, at least as of yet, unless they decide to put out a put out like a little comp video or whatever. But reading like Torrey McElhinney's notes or observations from OTAs, one of the things that first jumped out to you, Jonathan, was the first line of the offensive line part two section,
Yep.
which was, for those who haven't read it yet, says we don't really need to talk much about the first team offensive line, considering it's a group that feels set in stone.
Now, whether that's And the comment I made to you was, I don't know if they mean for this mini camp, for what have you, but you know, that does not include Matthew Bergeron. He's running with the twos right now. And so, yeah, that's, it's an, it doesn't, it's not a worry bit, but it is something that was interesting to read. And then you may, I know you made the comment that, like, you know, we've had, you know, you look at the last couple of years, year one of Arthur Smith, they drafted Richie Grant in the second round. He didn't start basically the whole year.
Right. Like he has some spot starts here and there at the nickel position, basically out of necessity. But last year was his first full year starting.
Yep. And the same thing with Troy Andersen. Like he became the starter later in the year, but he started off as like spot start, you know, spot, not even spot starting, just like spot rotation guy.
Right. Yep. And the same deal with, you know, Ebiketie. Like Ebiketie, we looked it up before the, you know, now granted he got a good chunk of snaps before he got that forearm injury, but he was at like 537. And that for comparison purposes, Myles Garrett, who is a full-time DN, obviously, but Myles Garrett was over 800 snaps. So that lets you know that, you know, Myles Garrett wasn't far off from doubling what, you know, Ebiketie put in or logged last year. So, yes, this seems to be necessarily like, if we draft you in the first round, we're probably expecting a good bit. So far, the second round, you know, second round and lower, they seem to want to sit there and develop. Now, this also could be, you know, part of that on the defensive side, you know, was that appease thing. Very well could have been, you know, very well could have been. It'll be interesting for the defensive guys that we drafted this year. Now that Ryan Nielsen's here, does that change? Are they counting on, are they going to be counting on Zach Harris or Harrison more this year than maybe we did?
The comments I've read about what the team's plans are for him, does it, like, look, if the guy, you know, shows out, he'll probably still play more, but he'll probably be, I would, if I had to take a guess, barring injury, he's probably looking at somewhere around maybe somewhat less of a share of like what Ebiketie got last year. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 snaps would be my guess. And as far as the peas thing goes, yeah, that's a possibility. The other thing might be that they're holding Bergeron until they really, kind of like they did with Ritter. Like, a lot of people were like, Ritter should have come in a lot sooner. But, like, Mariota wasn't, like, he didn't replace Mariota because of an injury. Yes, he did get the surgery after he was replaced because he was replaced. Right. But if he hadn't gotten replaced, he would have played out the rest of the year.
Right.
Barring any further injury, right? And so he wasn't replaced because of an injury. He was replaced because they felt like Ritter was ready.
Right.
I think they feel like they don't want to have another Jalen Mayfield incident.
On the head there.
If you had, you have a guy that's, you know, he played, it wasn't like he played even some left guard in college. He didn't play any. He played what he did play of in the Senior Bowl. He looked good. But, you know, to get the intricacies of the NFL offensive scheme down pat as a left guard, it's probably going to take him some time. So not seeing him be starter day one of mandatory minicamp doesn't necessarily mean that he could still end up being the day one starter for all we know. But if he's not, I'm not like, oh, man, that was a wasted pick. Oh, it's bust, bust city and all this other stuff. I'm going to – you know, err on the side of they want to wait till they feel he is truly ready to go. And I think once he is, unless Hennessy is straight up balling, I think that there's a good chance that he gets the shot. And if not this year, then it's next year, because you mentioned to me, Hennessy is a free agent.
Right.
After this year. So.
And that like the Bergeron pick, because Hennessy played, like the offensive line wise was playing pretty good, you know, like especially in the run blocking aspect towards the end of the season. So yeah, it easily could be a deal where, you know, hey, we can afford to let Bergeron sit and learn and get fully acclimated because he is having to switch a position. So there's like, you know, MJ like it sums it up pretty good here. It says Hennessy played well left guard last few games. I definitely wouldn't want to rush Matthew Bergeron. We don't need Mayfield build all over again. And that's, you know, that could be what they're seeing there. The fact that when Mayfield was brought up in the press conference, like it was pretty much because they were asking him about, like somebody was asking Arthur about like the cross training efforts. And like he made it clear that Mayfield really wasn't in line for a starting job at all. So, you know, the cross training was, you know, to make him more versatile in a piece for depth purposes. So like that lets you know right there that they, you know, whether they ever viewed Mayfield as a true long-term starter or not, they definitely realized that, you know, that ship has sunk in the sense of, so maybe now they're just trying to salvage a, you know, a third round pick, especially during his rookie contract. Cause if they can keep him on, you know, during his rookie contract, that's a cheap swing tackle option or a cheaper swing tackle option. There seems to be an interesting battle brewing for the nickel position. It was a foregone conclusion that when the Falcons signed Mike Hughes to a 2-year deal, a lot of people felt like he was just going to be the starting nickel. But by his choice or whatever, he wasn't at the previous voluntary OTAs. Now it's voluntary, so he didn't have to be. But that opened the door really to get a competition brewing with, you know, show favorite D. Alford, you know, camp darling from last year, mm-hmm. who, when he was given some chances, made some pretty good plays during the season. You know, that gave him the opportunity to really like compress himself upon the new coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball. And that might make an uphill battle for Mike Hughes to claim that, you know, nickel spot.
Yeah.
So.
I don't understand why I didn't necessarily, I wasn't looking for him. So I didn't notice that he wasn't there mm-hmm. at the bends, but a guy in his position who's kind of came into the league as a highly touted guy, but kind of has fallen off for him to just assume, we can't say that he did.
Right.
But the optics of this is, okay, they brought me in. I'm a highly drafted guy. They're obviously bringing me in as a starter to not show up for the voluntary OTAs, and then you know potentially lose out to D. Alford because D. Alford was there and showed out. And it's like now you just don't. You got to figure out some way to get your foot back in the door,
right?
To get in there, that you know could be a big mistake on his part.
You know, both of them seemed like they were trying their hands at like with, you know, with Avery Williams down, there's been a shuffle at the punt return. And it seemed like, you know, Mike Hughes threw his name in the ring for that. Same thing with D. Alford, which is not surprising as it is a way that they could, you know, further stick on the roster, which is, you know, a potential spot for a guy like Penny Hart or Josh Ali's, you know, Zay Malone, Killian Harris, these like lower end wide receiver guys, if they can really carve out a role doing that,
yep,
that can be a definitely way for them to stick, something we had talked about before. But Mike Hughes, like, he has that experience in college. That was something that he did at UCF, rather. And if I'm not mistaken, had a couple like returns for touchdowns and things like that. So that might potentially give him a leg up. NJ says, would Mike Hughes be a surprise cut? Could be a possibility with D. Alford / Clark Phillips taking over. I mean, he could be. Like, the intent has been pretty plain, like plainly put, that they want him to be hard to make this 53-man roster.
Yeah.
So, like,
the only thing I would say against it is we gave up draft capital for him. But that's
for Hughes.
I think so. Or is he a signing?
No, I think he was a signing.
You're
thinking of Okuda.
I know Okuda was, but I thought Hughes was. I just may have been thinking that they traded for him as well. If they didn't trade for him, if they signed him, then all bets are off.
Well, they signed him to like a 2-year, $7 million deal, which everybody was kind of like, or it may have been a little bit less than that, but it was a 2-year deal, and the way it was structured was like a 1-year, $2 million or 1-year, $3 million. So it wasn't necessarily – it's not structured in a way that would make it impossible to cut him. That much is for sure. So let's see. John says, Jalen Mayfield doesn't need to be anywhere near this team. John, we do need a water boy. I mean, we need somebody to carry equipment, right?
They always have that kid that runs out and grabs a tee. I mean, we could save some money on the kid and have Mayfield run out there and grab it.
There you go. Dwayne Brody. Appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you, Dwayne.
It's a $10 tip, which we thank you so much for. He says, what's up, P4P? As a 40-year-plus fan in CA, thank you for the real Falcons talk. At least 12-5 this year. Hope to see you, y'all, in Arizona in November. It's harvest time in AS and Arthur Smith, Cherry Font, No We Trust. It is definitely like, harvest time is a real good way to put that. That's a real good analogy. We have been sowing and like preparing the fields for the past 2 years. It seems like to take the farming analogy all the way to the end, it's like Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot had bought a plot of land. And when they showed up, it was just overgrown, destroyed, absolutely just unusable. And you know, Smith and Fontenot got to work making it something, you know, that is usable, clearing it out, you know, tilling the fields, getting it planted, and now hopefully this year we get to reap our first harvest, and hopefully it's a good one, you know. So that's a good analogy. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you're from California, I can only imagine as a Falcons fan, the heartache of having to watch this team twice a year play the San Francisco 49ers back in the heyday. We were in the NFC West for some reason. I have no idea why.
I saw that graphic the other day. Somebody was talking about, so it was a team that hadn't done something since before the realignment. And so they showed the old alignment and like the NFC Central having 5 teams in it. It was weird. It was such a weird.
Yeah. It was weird. I mean, but it was the same way in baseball. Like the Braves for, I don't know how many years were in the NFC or the,
NL West.
The NL West.
Yep.
And that's where the best in the West.
Yep.
Like that was the tagline for so many years until realignment. And then it was the beast of the East.
Yep.
But yeah.
Yep.
It never made sense to me. I was like, why are we in the West division? We're about as East as you can get.
Yeah. It's crazy.
But yeah, I just remember getting hammered by the 49ers every single year, watching Joe Montana drop back, make himself a sandwich, grow some potatoes, wait for them to grow, pick them, cut them, fry them, eat them. And then he's like, oh, there's Jerry Rice. Boom, bro. Done. It's just, it was disgusting watching that.
Dre says, keep all the freaking DBs, the ones that get cut, put them on the practice squad, because that freaking game against the Bengals was hurtful and painful to watch. I think that's why they did what they did, like in the secondary in general. Like, you went out and got, Okuda and Flowers and Hughes and D. Alford, and like you stacked this with, like, you raise. We did a show, a couple weeks back, talking about raising the floor. And I feel like depth wise, and even Arthur Smith kind of brought it up today that, that you're going to be relying on that depth at some point. So, these guys have to be able to prove it, So,
yeah. I will say that probably, assuming things work out the way we think it's going to work out, the floor for the raising of the floor of talent has probably been the greatest in the secondary.
Right.
Putting in Bates, like you said, Flowers, Okuda, those guys, it's just, now if a guy like a Mike Hughes doesn't make the starting squad, then he, he's a very quality, potentially depth piece. That in case you ever need four DBs or some guy goes down with injury or something like that, then that's a guy who can come in and hopefully not have as big a drop-off as we would have had last year. So.
Fred, we appreciate you, brother. Fred is coming in with our daily dose of optimism. He says, we are winning the Super Bowl and the NFC is poor. How about this, Fred? I've got a couple wagers that I'm going to put out there with y'all, and if y'all can remember. First, I'm going to start with Tony. He says that Tony's been on this the whole time. He says, as I stated, yes. Tyler Vrabel will win the backup right spot over Mayfield. Tony, if they cut Mayfield or somehow he gets moved to the practice squad or whatever, if it is a clear cut that Vrabel won that job over Mayfield, I don't know if you want it, but I have a pound for pound iron-on patch that – you could put on a backpack or a hat or a t-shirt or something. I will send this to you if that ends up happening. Same deal with you, Fred, in a sense of if the Falcons win the NFC South, and I'm just saying the South, which is very doable. If they win the South and make it into the playoffs, I will also send you one of these that you could then iron on to whatever it is you would like to iron on. Now, the one caveat is it is June. I am not going to remember this. So, just throwing that out there. It is June. These bets are long bets that are going to take a while to get paid off. So, if those end up happening, then y'all are going to have to remind me, and I will gladly mail you some pound-for-pound iron-on patches. All right. Anyway. So, all right. So Tony's going to like follow straight. I love Tony. He's going to follow it up with the projected backup O-line. He says Greenridge, Schaefer, Hennessy at center, Javon Green at right guard, and Vrabel at right tackle. Tony is the only man I know that will give me a projected backup lineup. I love it. Absolutely love it. Go ahead.
The only person I disagree with there is I think Hennessy.
Yeah.
At this point, I think Hennessy's probably your day one starter. Now, by the end of the season, is he a starter? I don't know. But I think day one, Hennessy might be your starter.
Right.
I could absolutely be wrong, and I would love for Bergeron to play well enough and show out well enough that he wins that spot. But I'm gonna take a flyer on Hennessy being the starter.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that week one, Hennessy is your starter. Unless like you said, unless Bergeron just absolutely flattens everybody. William Carter. Ooh, Rise Up Pound for Pound family, thank you guys for the work that you guys put in. Well, we'd like to say, we thank y'all for being here. If it wasn't for y'all, we wouldn't do it. Jonathan could just drive over to the house. We'd sit on the back
porch. I mean, like, literally the things that we talk about on here are things that me and him have, like actual conversations me and him have just had. So if we weren't doing it in front of you guys, we'd be doing it in front of his daughter and my wife, and they would just end up getting annoyed with us with how much Falcons we talk.
That's it. So, but I will say this. we make the statement that we would just be doing it anyway. It is far more entertaining even for us to do it here with y'all, conversing back and forth. King says, Goodfellas, what's going on? You know, just chatting it up, bro. Chatting it up and, talking about these mandatory mini camps that have kicked off. All right. Let's see.
I'll say this. I know where you're going with that, but real quickly, I just want to profess my love for Cordarrelle Patterson. The man is nothing if not an optimistic man. Always seems like he's just talking about upbeat things. Because he talked about being the first time with the team this year in minicamp. They talked about with Bijan Robinson coming in. He talked about watching the film of the practices, seeing how much fun they're having out there is just awesome. Couldn't wait to get out there today and have fun with those guys. Say he's talked to Bijan, watching practice film every day, see the things they're doing. He's going to bring so much to the offense. It's just nothing but positive, just energy that this man brings. And, what that means for this team, especially for younger guys that are in the league, coming into the league, like Bijan and still even Tyler, having this guy just be welcoming and all the positive energy on top of Bijan's positive energy it's a refreshing thing to see.
Oh, yeah. Cordell's one of those guys that it wouldn't surprise me one bit that you keep him on just for the attitude and stuff that he brings, the energy, the professionalism, the charismatic nature. You don't necessarily pay a locker room guy, but when you have, the money situation that we have right now, where we're not paying a top wide receiver, we're not having to pay a top, tight end, we're not having to pay a top, quarterback or what have you, you can afford to have a guys like Cordell, like a Calais Campbell, that bring as much to the locker room and the practice field as they do to the actual game itself. I was glad to see that he was back. He was one of those guys that they always talk about. Oh, we have a plan for him as far as wanting him to be fresh for the season. They understand that he's a 32-year-old running back. They get that, and they're not trying to, wear him out while it doesn't count. You have other guys that can do that. As long as he is there and engaged, that's really all you need, and that's really all you're wanting from him. I think I said on a show a while back that he could be a surprise cut. Even though when I said it, I was like, I don't think that will happen. I legitimately don't. Sometimes when people ask questions like that, you give what would be considered a logical answer from a business standpoint, a roster construction standpoint. But then when you turn to the human side of it, the unlogical, in a sense, the more emotional side of it, you realize that a guy like Cordell means so much more to you than the snaps that he gives you in game. Kind of like a few years more when the Braves won the World Series and Jock Peterson.
Well, it was Jock Peterson, but also the guy that kind of brought a lot of energy to that clubhouse was We had him last year. I don't think we have him this year, but Guillermo Heredia.
Yeah, Heredia with the slash.
The swords.
Yep.
Like guys that, like that guy, you know, he was a clubhouse guy.
Right. And that's, to me, at this junction of his career, like, he surprised me the whole time he's been in Atlanta, so he could yet once again surprise me this year. But that very much seems like what Cordell Patterson has been, is, you know, that clubhouse guy.
Yep.
So the quote of the day.
And he's also just like the rest of Falcons Twitter. Like, whenever some dude comes open, he's like, bring him home, fam. Yeah,
that's right.
Bring him home.
That's right.
Or he'll be like, hey, call me. We'll talk.
We'll talk. We'll get something worked out, you know? So, yeah, it's like he's a guy who's like, you know, like King puts it here. He says he's a great dude on and off the field, and you don't have to worry about him getting into any trouble. Nothing but a positive, great guy. Right. He's a guy who has, you know, bounced around the league quite a bit, so understands the importance of, like, just that camaraderie and being around folks. So I'm glad he's here.
Yep.
And I'll be just thankful for whatever he can give us this year. Okay, so the quote of the day comes from in McElhaney's article is, she said, it was difficult to choose because I had two favorites. However, I mean, I'm including both because they have to do the same subject. And it says this from David Onyemata. The first quote is from Smith, who was asked about Onyemata in his press conference. Says he was a pain in the butt pain in the ass to game plan against. So that's, you know, interesting to hear. Smith faced him four times, and while he was in Tennessee, and apparently he was a guy who was always, they had to know where he was at. The second quote,
said he's pretty pleased to no longer have to worry about him.
Yeah.
Worry about having to game plan for him.
Right. And he said during his press conference that he was glad that he was on, like, in the Falcons red and black instead of on the Saints team. I was glad that he, like, something we'll get here to in just a second, but I'm glad he specifically said, and the Saints team, you know. But I'll get into that here in just a second, something I want to talk about. But the second quote comes from Onyemata himself. He was asked about Grady holding on to the reins of the defensive front with so many new faces. Onyemata said simply, this is still Grady's group. And I think this says a lot about the way vets like Onyemata, Campbell, and Bud Dupree respect Grady. Now, think about it. I'm not 100% sure where Onyemata was drafted at, but I know Bud Dupree was first round. I think Calais Campbell was first round. Onyemata may have been a little older. I'm not 100% sure. But Grady is a fifth-round guy who has had to fight and claw for everything that he has as far as his professional career. And, like, for these other guys who, you know, have established careers, who, you know, has either been the anchor or, you know, been the guy or highly touted as far as Bud Dupree is concerned, to come into Atlanta on a revamped defensive line with a new defensive coach. And Onyemata's got, you know, history with Nielsen. So Onyemata was a fourth-round draft pick, so he was even a higher draft pick than Grady. So with that being said, all those guys come here and are still looking at Grady as being, you know, the leader of this defensive line, the leader of this group, and really the leader of this defense. That was absolutely amazing to me. You know, I mean, I don't expect to, like, hear me when I say this. I don't expect Onyemata to be like, Grady who? You know, like who you talk, you know. No, that's not how these guys go. Sometimes it's like, oh, well, what do you expect them to say? But for him to choose to say, this is still Grady's group, I found that to be an interesting, you know, turn of phrase or choice of phrase.
Well, he's the guy that's been here, right? You know, this is his ninth season. He's been a Falcon his entire career. He's been at plenty of times in his especially recently, he's been like the guy, like the one guy on the defensive line that you could, you know, if somebody was going to get to the quarterback, he was the guy you expected to do it. There wasn't really anybody else to do it. And he's been through some bad times, been through some lean times. So, like, you're respecting the man for the work that he's put into his career to this point, the respect that he has amongst his teammates, you know, both new and old. It just speaks volumes to that. And yeah, you know, he's a guy that, you know, if they came to the team, knew Grady, you know, had heard about him, and they come to the team and he's a guy that like doesn't practice what he preaches, kind of, you know, he doesn't show up at practice and do all the things at practice that he does and show the attitude that he does, then I think that kind of quote doesn't happen.
Right.
But when they come in, they see like this guy is like the face of the franchise on the defensive side, like absolutely. And when they come in, they see him like working hard, coming out to practice, doing all the things you're supposed to be doing and doing it the right way. That's where that respect comes from. And I think that's exactly what that was. That was just, you know, giving him the respect that he's due because of the actions that he's taken. So.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But like I say, it was still to me, it was still good to, you know, to see that quote, especially like this early in the process. I noted, me and you noted, down there at the bins, Grady and David were talking quite a bit, you know, like almost every time you looked up, they had their heads together, and really like discussing. Like, I can only imagine, you know, like path tendencies and, oh, like on this type of a rush, you know, how quickly do you like to get to this spot or that spot, you know, like talking, like trying to get in sync is what I can truly imagine.
Yeah.
Tony, you always coming in clutch. This is a 2016 fourth round pick out of Manitoba College. Tony, where is Manitoba? Is that like, that sounds like, is that
that's
like
a Canadian?
Yeah, I'm about to say it sounds like, yep, a Canadian college. So one day I'll like, Tony, if you ever like show up at a training camp, one like, man, I need to shake your hand. That's just impressive. The amount of work that my man puts in. So let's see here. There was something that like during a press conference that Arthur Smith, like the word came up a handful of times. Obviously you've seen it now in the title and the thumbnail and everything else, but it was evolve. And that was something that, you know, Arthur Smith had talked about as far as, you know, the scheme itself, with in regards to, oh, if you went back, like I think the quote was like, if you went back and looked at 2021, we ran the ball very differently than we did in 22. Because he specifically brought up the pistol formation that they put in, the RPOs, and where some people might not key in on that, I key in on it because to me it brings forth the idea that, like, whether you realize or not, they're tailoring their schemes to the players that they have. Mm-hmm. Which is something that I begged for from our coaches. You know, instead of square peg, round hole type situation, get a saw and make the daggum hole square. Yep. Instead of trying to force the square peg through that round hole. And that's on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I talked about this. They were talking about like playbook being this big and whatever, you know, it's like my playbook needs to be as thick as it needs to be for the given situation.
Yep.
You know, whether that's guys are still trying to come to grips with the defense, in that case, you keep it smaller. If everybody on the defense is like really like on the same page, they all get it. They all understand the scheme and they, you know, inside and out, then my playbook goes to that big, you know, because I've got so many more options. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how many pages I have in that playbook if I'm not, curating it and using the parts of that playbook that put the guys that I have in the best position to succeed. If I don't do that, then I'm just going to run into you're going to run into Dan Quinn when he was with the Falcons, which is I'm going to run my same defense. It's not a complex defense, but you still have to, everybody has to be on the same page. It's even more so important because it isn't that complex. So you're not fooling anybody. So everybody has to be on the same page. And it worked really, really great when he was in Seattle, when he had all pros all over the field, and now you go to Dallas and you see he's in Dallas and he has changed it up some, but at the end of the day, he still has all pro guys all over the field. Still and has that makes it work.
Yep.
So like when he didn't have that kind of talent in Atlanta, he was still trying to run the same stuff and it was just not working because you didn't have the horses to run.
I am much more impressed with a Belichickian, a Shanahan style coach that can morph and change or, make the scheme is far more like malleable to the to be able to use any player in it.
Yeah.
Or be able to morph to the morph to what you have on the roster. And so like you talk about last year with this crappy of a roster as we had, we still won 7 games and produced 2,700 yards rushing. That is crazy to me.
That's a lot of yards.
Right. You had, crap. I'll pull it up again. But I mean, you had, like I said, you had over 2,700 yards rushing last year. There were times in the Browns game where you went on a 10-play drive, got a touchdown, and never threw the daggum ball. Like, everybody in that building knew you were going to run it, and guess what? You're able to run it. Like, everybody gets caught up in the, it doesn't look like X, or you don't have this, or you don't have that. I saw a stat earlier today that there were only 2 tight ends last year that had over 25% of their passes being over 20-plus yards down the field. That was Greg Dulcich and Kyle Pitts. I saw another stat that was talking about, like, deep shots or like deeper passes on early downs. Like Atlanta was in the top 5 of that.
Yep.
So it doesn't necessarily look a lot like everybody else's schemes, but it's a scheme that is like ever evolving and ever changing, which is what you want. Nick's not wrong here. He says the talent makes the scheme easier. Yes, of course. But when you can still do it regardless of the talent, then when you do get the talent, it goes even. Look at Kyle Shanahan in 2016 when he had the talent of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. Like Austin Hooper, those guys, when you had the talent, what did they produce? Oh, only the second best in offense that had ever stepped foot on an NFL field, like points wise. The only thing that was any better was the greatest show on turf, and it wasn't better by much. So, yeah, Sanu, forgot about Sanu.
Yeah.
But so now you take that same head coach who was able to get back to the Super Bowl and has had some pretty good deep runs. But he hasn't had the same, like, those years. His defense is actually what has been, like, carrying him through the season. Obviously, injuries and everything else that they've had to deal with out there. But the scheme still works regardless of who you put in the backfield. It's just when you have the talent, it goes through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent there, but
no, it's like you're absolutely right. It's just, you know, I will be interested to see if we can stay away from the injury bug. Knock on wood. You know, if we can stay away from the injury bug, and this the talent, the team as constructed right now, for the most part, makes it to opening day, and seeing, especially the offense, because the offense is where the continuity is, right? We don't, no matter what, we can't really for 100% certainty say what the defense is going to be. But there is the continuity on offense, and at least you have the same thinkers, right? You have still right. the same brains working to better that offense. So we can kind of have a better idea of what maybe we're going to see there or hope to see there. And but I cannot wait to see this team as well coached as it was last year, but this year with the talent to do something with it. That's what's exciting to me. And I can't wait for opening day. And hopefully we give, you know, Bryce a warm Atlanta Falcons welcome to the NFL.
Yep. Now, Michael Rosenstein just posted his notes from the practice. I don't know if we want to get into any of those. Let's see. Hold on. Tony says, yeah, Jaron, yet Shanahan can't run the football on second and third downs late in the Super Bowl. So then we can kick a field goal. Yeah, I know, right? Yes, but, like, the flip side of that coin is being aggressive is what got you there. You know, so, you know, it just – who knows? I'm with you, though. I'm absolutely with you. I'm trying to see if there's anything that Graham says he felt good, felt surprisingly good. He says, I felt strong and confident, good moving around. So that's good to hear from Taquan Graham. Here we go. Among the other back at mandatory minicamp, linebacker Michael Walker, who kind of wondering where he fits in, right?
Yeah.
Who did limited work. Was he hurt? Did I miss him being hurt? Somebody had to. Says,
I don't remember hearing about it.
Work, and Cordell Patterson, who spoke after practice. So, okay, they didn't really say anything about what Michael did. Here's one he says, Josh Ali, pay attention to the name. He comes up as part of the conversation in the return game. He says he seemed to be a bit of everywhere offensively Tuesday. The receiver had a nice grab on the sidelines from Desmond and caught a good ball in the end zone in 7-on-7 from Woodside, beating Troy Anderson. It's a wide open receiver room beyond Drake London and likely Mac Hollins. Cordell Hodge, Scotty Miller, and Ali could be someone to watch. All right. So that's the kind of stuff that we want to hear, right? Is you know, Josh Ali. So let's see. Now, the one thing we haven't talked about, somebody else brought it up earlier. It says, speaking of returners, a long list of returners, Zay Malone and Bijan Robinson. I know there's consternation about Robinson being back there, but don't have it. If he's the best at the position, he could end up being dynamic and a game changer, but it's important to have players get work back there just in case of emergency too. I think that has probably more to do with it myself.
Yeah.
Cause I don't necessarily see you putting Bijan on a punt return. Not unless, not unless you just had to, I guess.
Look, at the end of the day, he's a guy that, I could see, if he comes out and like does really well, I could see him do it. But yeah, I think even if he does really well, he's potentially way too important offensively for you to let him go.
Especially
back there.
Considering from what we've heard already, they're lining up Bijan everywhere. I saw one report that said they saw him in the slot quite a bit. So I can't see them expecting him to log that much.
I could see him potentially being in a spot where, kind of like the way Deshaun Jackson was for a while, where he wasn't a guy that did punt returns a lot, but he was like, we need a big play,
right?
We need something, and so he was a guy that you brought in to for like that spark, or like, you know, against the Giants, you come in, you know, punt it to him, and then he takes it back for a touchdown to win you the game. So
right. He's echoing that D. Alford seems to be the early leader at nickel. Once again, getting first team reps ahead of Hughes. Although this could be a camp long competition too. This comes off the heels of, him saying that, Jalen Hawkins was working with the number two group, but also was getting some run in some packages with the ones. I think when they go big nickel, I think you're going to see Jalen Hawkins on the field.
Yep.
In my opinion. Unless, of course, Trey Flowers comes in and takes that particular role. But I think, you know, that says your starting safeties were obviously Jesse Bates and Richie Grant. Those are the two that this regime has, you know, put their capital into money-wise and draft capital. So there's no surprising there. Let's see. I'm trying to see if there's anything else interesting. Nah, pretty much about it there, about what we expected.
So yeah, that's see. Yeah. The Josh Ali, his name keeps popping up. So
yeah, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Yeah, it's going to be that return. That return spot is going to be somebody's avenue to stick on this team. Whether it's Alford being able to do that and the starting nickel, whether it's somebody like an undrafted guy like a Malone or an Ali, that's how they make their way on this team. That is going to be somebody's way of sticking on this team. All right, well, we got a few minutes left. If anybody's got any questions that they have are waiting or holding to get answered as we move into. Now, next week I will be out of town, so there's a possibility that there may not be a live show on Tuesday, but we'll see how all that shakes out. I will be on the backside of a campsite on West Point Lake. So I don't know what the signal is going to be like out there.
we'll see how that goes. If it'd be JR with a spotty connection, I might see if I can have somebody come on to sit with me if necessary. The person I have in mind is not necessarily an analyst or anything like that. I think it'd be cool to have them on to chat, but if that happens, so we'll see how it goes.
Right. Okay. Dre says, yes, sir. That freaking news I like and love to hear about my boy, my dog, my man, Jalen, the ball Hawkins. Yeah, that would be, I think that big nickel is probably going to be his way going forward. He's been a decent guy to have, but he hasn't necessarily been able to carve out a solid role. He was given that chance last year and, you know, didn't necessarily stand out. Not enough for them not to go get Jesse Bates, you know. So, because they could have used that money to grab a edge rusher or something of that nature, or who knows what else, but they chose to go get the, you know, arguably the best free safety out on the market. So the Hawkins is going to have to find a way to stick, and that big nickel could definitely be it.
I mean, if he can come in and be like a thumper, a guy that can get those like intermediate stuff, really like tag some guys there, jar the ball loose a few times, cover some, maybe not some of the better high end tight ends, but be a guy you can put on some league average tight ends, the average everyday tight end. and, you know, he can hold his own there, that's where he's going to have to be. That and probably special teams too. You know, he'll probably have to make sure he's doing his diligence on special teams. But yeah, he's, I want to see good things out of him, because I think he's done some good things while he's here, but then he's other times he just looks like he's just not paying attention to anything.
It can be tough at times for sure. Yep. Let's see. Emmanuel says, y'all really sleeping on Jalen. He is honestly a better cover safety than Richie. You finish reading that. I'm going to pull something up.
He said better cover safety than Richie Grant, and that's obvious. Richie got burnt so much last year while Jalen made play after play. Film all tells. Right, I'm not going to sit here and say you're 100% wrong, Emmanuel. Because right off the top of my head, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, I know one way or the other for sure. No. What I will say is it felt to me that Jalen Hawkins in run stopping was pretty good, but when it came to the pass game, it just felt like that he was lacking in that area. Now, JR may about be to say something that's going to completely disprove my theory.
No,
we'll see.
Okay, so this is according to PFF, and King's right. I think we'd already talked about this, but I'll do it again. It's fine. But according to PFF, Richie Grant's coverage grade by their metrics, and I always try to preface that because I'm not saying that they're the end-all be-all, but by their metrics, Richie Grant had a coverage grade of 69. And let's see here. I looked at the wrong thing when I looked at Jalen Hawkins. Nice. And so Jalen Hawkins' coverage grade was a 56.1. So by their metrics, Richie Grant was a better coverage safety than Jalen Hawkins. Yep. So I hear you on.
What about run stuffing? Does it say that?
Let's see. Run defense, RDF. So Jalen was 64.9. So let's go back to Richie. Maybe he had him in the run category. What did I say? 64.9. Okay. Run defense. Okay. 57.1 on Richie Grant. Yeah. So Jalen, and I've said for a while that I felt like Jalen was better at the closer to the line of scrimmage, myself.
Yeah.
I hear you. I get it. Like I said, that's why I preface it by for right now, my quick answer of what I can pull while I'm sitting here. I get you with the whole go watch film. Believe you me. I watch quite a bit of film. And what I will say in that aspect, without knowing what their assignments are in the coverages, in the scheme, the more I learn, the more I am hesitant to say this person does this better than that. Because in the scheme that we played, the safety's jobs, depending on what coverage was called, you know, could be vastly different. So it's just hard for me to say, you know, one was playing supremely better than others.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I agree with Nick. Like, I really don't care who starts the safety, whether it's Hawkins or Grant. Bates is definitely starting. So, whoever is starting alongside Bates, I don't care if it's Hawkins. I don't care if it's Grant. I don't care if it's Helms. I don't care if it's Trey Flowers. I really don't. Whoever they start at safety opposite Jesse Bates, just play the position.
That's it. Like,
do a good job playing the position. And if you do that, I'm really not going to care one way or the other what your PFF stats look like. I like what like I was just giving my personal opinion just from because I watch every single game, sometimes more than once, depending on like how bad or how good it was. I did a lot. I watched most games at least one time on top of the initial view. But you know, and just from my eyes and my impressions watching the games, like I come away thinking exactly the same as PFF, which is right. In coverage, Grant has the upper hand when it comes to thumping and run run defense. Hawkins is a bit better on that.
All right, let's see. Okay, so Emmanuel says, like, you know, Richie got burnt. Okay, let's see. I ain't gonna hark on this too much longer. I'm waiting to see if somebody else, you know, gives up another question or whatnot. But Grant had five pass breakups, two interceptions, and gave up three touchdowns with yards after the catch on against him less than 200. So let's see. How about I just copy this, duplicate this? So I ain't got to keep. So I can keep it up. Jalen. Glad I put this RAM on computer. My computer don't slug nearly as much doing this nowadays. All right. Hawkins had four pass breakups, so it's one less. Same amount of interceptions. Gave up less touchdowns, so there's a point for Emmanuel. He only gave up one touchdown. Then yards after catch. This also can... but it can be indicative of where he was playing if he's playing closer to the line of scrimmage, but gave up less yards, 88. So, you know, Grant had more pass breakups, same amount of interceptions. So, I don't know. All I'm saying is that from what I saw, you know, Grant looked more natural covering the back end, you know, or looked better on that aspect. Both of the guys played better up closer to the line of scrimmage. That's a problem because you need somebody who can play deep coverage. Obviously, that's going to be, Bates. So, yeah, either way, I think the safety room got better with the presence of Bates, obviously. Let's see. This one. Then we'll go to that one. He says, hey, y'all, do you think Bijan is going to win Rookie of the Year? Because I think he's going to run away with it. If he
pun.
I love him. If he gets the usage that we think it could be and he stays healthy because, like, Kenneth Walker was, like, really on his way of winning it. And I don't think there's any, like, wide receiver that's, like, rookie wide receiver that's going to necessarily dominate this year. So he's got the absolute best opportunity if he gets the usage that we think he's going to get. Would say yes. Jonathan,
I mean, it's a, you know, this far out from the season, never know. But the vibe I get from when I saw him live, when I see him in interviews, when I see the coaches talk about him, and I see other people like looking at this team and what Bijan can be, I think there's a very, very, very good shot that he, if not winning it, is like way up there in the running for it.
Yep.
Like maybe there's a defensive guy that comes up, Jalen Carter, for all we know, Jalen Carter could come out and be defensive. I guess they have offensive and defensive, but there's not just a straight Rookie of the Year. But you know, on offense, I really don't see anybody that could really, you know, unless somebody's really surprising, I just don't see anybody that really pushes Bijan for that. Maybe, maybe Jahmyr Gibbs.
Maybe Gibbs, but I definitely think Bijan could easily run away with it. Yeah. He says, hey boys, any prediction on who the starting linebackers will be? I believe Anderson will be the number one and surprise drum roll. D'Angelo Malone. Huh.
You're 50% right.
Yeah, you got to have that, right?
I think D'Angelo Malone, I think, is going to be – I think he will play some linebacker. I don't think he's a starting linebacker. I think it's Caden Ellis.
Yep. I think it's Caden Ellis. You pay Caden Ellis starter money. $3 million,
$21. Unless he just
$21 million.
Yeah. Training camp.
All right. I think it's going to be Troy Andersen and Caden Ellis. And I think you might be right on the, you know, first linebacker off the bench might be D'Angelo Malone. Like, he could be battling with Michael Walker or what have you, but I definitely think the starters are going to be Andersen and Ellis. Let's see here. All right. Let's see. Question. In what week should we be starting to see us playing our best ball of the season? For me, that tends to, like, I don't start to panic or worry or what have you, or even get too excited until about week 4 or 5. Like, week 4 or 5 is, to me, when you truly start seeing what this team is going to be all season. Because at that point in time, everybody's got their kinks worked out. You should be gelled as far as O-line, D-line. Like, you really should be fully into whatever your scheme is going to be for that season. So week 4 or 5, we'll have a real long discussion about what this team is looking like.
Yeah, I will say, though, I think where I want to see us starting to play the best ball of the season, I agree with Jay in that 4 or 5 is about where we start to kind of really get a good idea of what this team's going to be. But I think, just like we saw in the 2016 season when we made it to the Super Bowl, you didn't see the best of that team until – what, week 8, 9, 10?
Somewhere like in that range. Where we really started, like, putting rolling. People to, like putting people to sleep, so to speak.
Yeah.
Games.
Yeah, so for me, I want to see our best ball, like, get through, like, the first 8 to 10 games, either, you know, a game or two above 500, at minimum 500 through the first 10 games. Like, get at minimum, okay? But I want to see, like, around week 10, week 11, that's when I want to see, like, everything starting to click.
Right.
Like, Ritter, so far, has been a guy, and this has played out in his college ball as well, but maybe, you know, he can get past this. But Ritter's been a late starting guy. Like,
yeah.
When the game starts out, he, you know, things are not quite there. And then he's a guy that puts everything together as the game goes, let alone the season, the game. And as the game goes along, he gets better and better. That's what, yep, we saw that in just about every game he played in, minus maybe the Saints game.
Right.
His very first game. But from game 2 through 4, he got better each game. And within each game, he started out a little slow and then picked it up as the game went along.
Yep.
My hope would be, by around week 10, 11, Ritter's a guy who gets started quicker, gets in that rhythm quicker.
Much faster.
You know, maybe by that time, Arthur Smith will have figured out the best way to get him in there.
That's the hope, right?
You know, because it could be different for different quarterbacks, like Matt Ryan. But, you know, maybe it was like, get him some deep shot, you know, like I say deep, like 10, 15-yard passes that are as easy to complete as you can make them. Get him going in that realm, and then once you do, then you're getting him into that rhythm. And once Matt Ryan got into that rhythm in 2016, it was lights out. It was,
yep,
we're done for. And so that's the hope that I want to see, is around 10, 11 is where I think we should be playing our best ball this season.
MJ says Trey Flowers locked a roster spot, primarily third downs covering tight ends. He played that role very well for the Bengals. He did, but he ain't no guarantee right now. Like, nope. He's going to be, you know, battling with Jalen Hawkins for that, you know, third safety role.
The only guys I'm going to say 100% safe for this coming season as far as cornerbacks go. I don't think there's – even if they stink it up, I don't think we're seeing any of these guys get cut. And the only guys I'm going to say that about are A.J. Terrell, Jeff Okuda.
Yeah, yep.
Clark Phillips.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, Do I honestly think that a lock is going to be Terrell, obviously Okuda, Clark Phillips, D. Alford, maybe Mike Hughes. Okay. Those are kind of your 4 to 5 locks, I would say, if I'm a betting man right now. And Trey Flowers is going to be battling it out with some guys for that sixth spot if we're keeping six.
Emmanuel says, do you see us beating either the Lions or the Jags? That's right around the week 4 or 5 you're mentioning, JR. I'll tell you this, man. The Lions and the Jags aren't the pushover that they were a few years back. I mean, the Jags have a respectable head coach in Doug Peterson, who's won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. And, you know, he had Trevor Lawrence looking good towards the, you know, middle part of that season last year. And you also got to remember they're adding Calvin Ridley, which we know what he can do. Mm-hmm. And then I have to, like, in one of those sections right now, at least it seems like I have to might eat crow with my initial thoughts on the Detroit Lions. Cause when they hired Dan Campbell, I laughed. I was like, dude, you're hiring this lunkhead, you know? And he is definitely like proving me wrong in that aspect, as far as being a guy who can actually build and motivate a team to play. So it's going to be interesting to see how those games go, you know, because those aren't as what I would have called, you know, locks like I would have a few years back. So your guess is as good as mine. I hope so. I think we can beat them.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Lions got talent all over the place. Jahmyr Gibbs, as we had talked about previously mentioned, they got Aiden Hutchinson, who was on a tear last year. So, I don't know, dog. It's gonna be interesting.
The Lions are weird in that the recent history has been either they completely stink or they kind of do what they did last year, which is they end the season on a somewhat upbeat note. They almost make the playoffs. And then either and I can absolutely see this happening. In the past, what's happened is they come back next year, expectations get higher. And then they fall flat on their face.
Right.
Do I think that's going to happen this year?
They're everybody's darling right now. Like few years back, the Browns were everybody's darling. They're everybody's darling right now. So, I mean, even CDX for Life says they got the Lions as a team to win a Super Bowl. I mean, there's some pretty high expectations for them. So, it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Tony says they still have some defensive problems. They do. They remade that secondary. Two of the guys that we have on our team was a part of the reason why they remade that secondary, in Jeff Okuda and Mike Hughes. So, I don't know.
Yep.
But
all right. As far as the Jags go, again, if they build on what they did last year, that's going to be a really good team this year.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. They were a playoff team last year. Jonathan, how you let me go through this whole show and didn't tell me that the banner wasn't going across the bottom?
Like, the banner's not going across the bottom, Jay.
Hold on. There. Here at the 1 hour, 20-minute mark, welcome to Pound for Pound Live. I appreciate it if you liked, shared, subscribed, and join the conversation in the comments.
Yep.
Now back to your regularly scheduled follow us on Twitter banner. Let's see. Is there anything else? I don't really see anybody else asking any other questions. King's talking about, you know, Bijan and Gibbs will be the top backs in the NFL in the next few years. These guys' vision and speed is insane. Almost the same type of player, to be honest. Bijan is slightly better, but it's close. It is very close. Like,
I mean, I went back and forth. I was like, Jahmyr Gibbs, that dude's a dog.
Like, my bigger thing was like at Alabama, you just didn't see him run through the tackles as much as he did. So when he stepped up in competition, he got used more of a as a dump off pass catcher. He was their leading receiver, you know, last year. So, but what you didn't see him do was line up and consistently run through the, you know, SEC defensive line. So who knows, right?
So if you want to look at it that way, like Jahmyr Gibbs ran behind essentially as close as you could probably get outside of maybe Georgia, like an NFL line.
Right.
Like that's what he ran behind last year. Whereas Bijan ran behind probably at least from everything I've read, like one of the worst.
Yeah, it was not a very good. It was not a very good line, and he was still able to be productive.
Yeah, so you get him in Atlanta, where the assumption is that we build on last year and have at least as productive, if not a more efficient run game than we had last year. Maybe not running it quite as often, but when we do, we're tearing off bigger chunks on a per run basis. The sky's the limit, you know,
right.
If he's able to do it with that trash offensive line in Texas, what does he do with a good, you know, decent to really good NFL line?
Right. So. Well, cool, man. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today on a day that there's a little bit to talk about. We were actually able to make a show out of it. Like I said, keep your eye on the channel as we'll have something out on for the weekend, but we might take a break on next Tuesday, depending. It's going to be more on Jonathan than it is me, but we'll figure all that out. If not, we may just like come back and do a live next Friday kind of thing. Who knows? But we'll see how that goes. As always, Falcons fans, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grim1128. GRIMM1128. Jonathan?
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
That's right. Appreciate you folks, and keep your eye on the channel. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.